Hello and welcome to the Healthy Hustlers podcast. We're your happy hosts, Amy and Madeline, best friends who work hard and hustle harder. We believe to be happy and healthy in your work, you need to be happy and healthy in your life.
We combine health, well-being and business with a fresh perspective to share the stories of normal people with inspiring lives. From leading entrepreneurs to athletes, models and artists, together we delve deep into their journey to success to find out why health and well-being is at the core of their philosophy.
Whether you're looking for advice and guidance for leading your best life, an engaging, easy-to-digest pep talk, or a boost of healthy enthusiasm to fuel your health and wellness goals, the Healthy Hustlers podcast is your go-to for kicking ass in work and play. More commonly known as DJ Tiger Lily, Dara Hayes is the queen of the disco decks. Raised in Maroubra, Sydney, there is so much more than meets the eye with this gentle, warm and bubbly soul. An avid supporter of health and fitness, the internationally renowned DJ is regularly jet-setting across the globe to spin the decks at some of the biggest nightclubs and music festivals in the world. Understanding the importance of a healthy mind and body, Dara hasn't let her hectic lifestyle be a compromise for her health and well-being. With over 600,000 people watching her every move, Dara positively promotes a happy, balanced and infectious lifestyle, encouraging her community to take care of their mind, body and spirit. Meeting us on her recent trip to Melbourne, Dara came to my parents' house in South Yarra, politely and confidently walked in and greeted us all with her beautiful smile. In just moments, it felt like we'd known her forever. We sat down and had the best conversation about Dara's journey, living her passion and the healthy habits she can't live without. Hi Dara, how are you?
Hey girls, I am brilliant. How are you both?
Really good, thank you. Welcome to Melbourne. I hope it's not too cold for you today.
It actually is beautiful weather at the moment. I am surprised.
Yeah, you've
done well.
We've
had no rain, no sleet, nothing. It's been sun. It's been good.
Yeah, it is good. It doesn't usually happen, so make the most of it. So let's kick off by hearing about your happy place. Where do you go to unwind and reconnect?
So my happy place is, I suppose, the suburb in which I grew up in, Maroubra in Sydney. I moved away from Maroubra about 4 months ago, and I've definitely noticed it taking a little bit of a toll on me in general. I don't have like the availability of the open space and the ocean to kind of, you know, reconnect. But one of my favorite practices to do to reconnect is to go back home, go to Maroubra and go for a walk on the beach and a swim in the ocean, even if it's freezing. I think that's like a really nice way to ground yourself.
Absolutely. I can relate to that a lot. I actually grew up at the beach as well, and we're lucky enough to still have our family home down there. So I love getting back there and getting to the beach. There's something so calming about being by the ocean.
Yeah. Last winter, when I was still living at home, I made like a promise like to as many days I could go down and like swim in the ocean, even if it's literally like 1 second in and out. And it was the best way to start your day. Like there was nothing else like it. It felt really good. So yeah, sad I'm not doing that at the moment, but it's okay.
At least you're making the most of it when you can.
Yes.
It's good to hear. Now, can you take us all the way back to your childhood and give us a little sneak peek into Dara growing up?
Sure. I think I was a little bit weird growing up. I was definitely a little bit of a nerd, really into arts and craft. We used to have this like big craft cupboard, and so like as many afternoons a week as we could, we'd go and make necklaces out of pasta and all these crazy drawings and stuff. My mum was really hands-on with us, so that was always really fun. We grew up in like a really beautiful house with a pool and a garden, and it was just, I was really lucky. I had a really ideal childhood. Like it was really relaxing and just lots of family time, which was great. I went to a really cool school as well, and I had lots of friends. But in saying that, I was, yeah, it wasn't very cool. I was a little bit nerdy. Ended up being school captain of primary school. And then I ended up moving away from like my area to go to high school. I got into a selective school down south of Sydney, and I made the decision to go. And it was honestly the best thing, one of the best things I did as like a younger kid. I think being able to recreate yourself and having space to breathe from the confines of your childhood area where everyone knows who you are and who your family are and things like that. It was really awesome. I got to really be myself all over again, and that was really nice. I met some really great friends there. Apart from that, my childhood was pretty active. We played like lots of sports. I was an avid gymnast, and I used to go to the gym, like, not like the weights gym, like gymnastics gym. Like, I was training at one point something like 25 hours a week. It was pretty mental. Yeah. And then we also played soccer and hockey and did little A's and nippers, which I absolutely hated. So it was a really like active, fun childhood. Yeah, and looking back, I've got lots of good memories. Hmm.
That's really lovely. It seems like you almost had the perfect childhood, would you say?
Yeah, I really did. Like, looking back on it, there's nothing bad about it. Like, we had great holidays. We ate really healthily. It's so funny. In hindsight, you look back and you're so grateful. Mum used to pack us these lunches that was like a salad sandwich, like an apple, a banana, a pear, and a muesli bar or something like that, literally every day. Similar stuff. Brown bread. I would look at my friends' lunches and they'd have white bread with peanut butter and jam. They'd have chips. They'd have Dunkaroos. They'd have shapes. They'd have all this stuff. And I was always so jealous. But like, looking back on it, how great that like mum cared that much to like pack up these healthy lunches, write little notes every day in our lunchbox. And we'd come home from school and she would have made like pikelets or muffins or like something from scratch, which was so nice. Like, really ideal.
How funny is it? I can relate to that a lot because my mum was exactly the same and would, I think, you know, one of the worst things we would have was celery with peanut butter in it and would be like, oh God, mum. But I find now, like, I was the same at school. I was so jealous of all the kids that had roll-ups and twisties in their lunchbox.
Always wanted roll-ups.
Yeah. Me too.
And now I'm like, I have been thinking a lot lately how, you know, from getting from like about around 25, I really started to go back to all the things that I had in my childhood, like loved being, you know, riding a bike again and being at the beach and eating really healthy and all this stuff. And I'm like, wow, my parents were doing this for us forever and I like didn't even appreciate it at the time. Yep, and now it's totally. Like, oh, I'm going straight back to all of that and it just feels so nice and natural.
Yeah. And it's funny. I think that's just like that natural progression, isn't it? From like doing what your parents do because you have to, breaking away because you can, and you go out and you eat Maccas and you drink alcohol and you do whatever, and then coming back and realizing, oh, my parents actually had it really right the whole time.
Yeah, totally. So talk us through straight after high school. Mm-hmm. What did you do straight out of high school? Did you go to uni or?
So being at a selective school for girls, there was a huge amount of pressure on us to go straight to uni. So I think out of the 200 girls in my year, everyone went to uni bar two or something. It was some mental statistic like that. So I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I thought actually at the time that I wanted to be a dentist. So I went and started studying like Bachelor of Science at Sydney Uni. And that was initially a 3-year course. And then you would go on and do another, I think, 3 years of dentistry. And a year into science, I was like, stuff this. This is awful. I'm spending my day in a lab coat and I hate chemistry. Like, I do not care. I've got to change. And so I was looking at all these other courses. Looking back, I don't know why I just didn't take a gap year. But once again, like that pressure to kind of finish a degree. So I found this degree I wanted to do, media and communications at Sydney. And luckily enough, I had just gotten the cutoff mark in my HSE to get into the course. Like, I don't know, it's kind of serendipitous. Is that the word? Like, you know.
Meant to be.
Yeah, really meant to be. And then I ended up studying that. So that was a 5-year degree. I had a double major of marketing and sociology and completed that. But alongside all of this, I was like in the nightclubs every week DJing. So I think I started DJing when I was 19, so about a year and a bit after high school, and just picked up a pair of decks and started practicing in my bedroom for a couple months. And then there was this competition called Your Shot, and I'm not sure if you guys have heard of it, but to cut a long story short, it's a competition where they teach about 100 kids once a year in each state of Australia how to DJ. So they teach you from scratch. And then at the end of like these 6 weeks of intensive lessons, there's a massive competition and you like compete against the other young DJs. So I thought that was a great thing to do. And I did that and I ended up coming second. And that was in 2011.
Oh, wow.
And that was kind of what gave me the confidence to like kickstart everything else.
Wow. So you're an internationally renowned DJ and have been on tour with the likes of Tiësto, as well as being voted number one female DJ for 3 years in a row. Mm-hmm. Wowee. Can you share with us how you've turned your passion into a full-time career? I'm guessing it's obviously the competition is what started it off.
Yeah, so I think Your Shot was definitely what started it off. But at that point, it was still very much a fun hobby. And it was for years. Like, it was a hobby, I would say, for 2 or 3 years. It's only kind of gotten serious in the last 4 years, which, to be honest, is how it should be. Like, music is so creative and performing is so much fun. I think people often don't succeed because they go into it thinking, I want to be famous. I want to be rich. I want to be this. I want to be that. No, you just should be there because you're having fun and you enjoy music. So it started off just like that for a couple of years, and I think, yeah, maybe 4 years ago, I started to realize, wow, I've got a lot of responsibility on my shoulders. I'm playing some pretty huge gigs, I'm getting paid good money, being flown all over the world. I really need to start looking at this seriously, like a business, because it is a business now. Yeah. And I think when I left uni and made the decision not to pursue any work and focus on my DJ career, that was when I was like, okay, cool, I've got to like knuckle down now and work hard. So there's so much, like, I could literally talk for hours about like what it took to go from bedroom DJ to like doing what I'm doing now. But I suppose there are a couple things that I would like to touch on. First of all, getting a good team around you. I don't think it's essential as an artist or a creative or as anything, whether you're like a model or a Instagrammer or a healthy hustler, like no matter what you are, I don't think you necessarily need agents and management, but I think creating a good team of people around you that really believe in you is pretty essential if you're wanting to take things to the next level. To add to that, I think a lot of young creatives come to me and say, how did you get, you know, your agents, blah, blah, blah. And I say, they came to me. And I think what the really important takeaway from that is, don't go chasing management and don't go chasing agents, and whether, you know, it's in any type of work, people will come to you if they want to work for you and they believe in you, I suppose. So that's that. And then another thing that I think is really important is branding. Everything is so oversaturated these days, like everything, DJing and music and the dance music industry being one of them. And not that I realized this at the time, it was really just a subconscious decision, but dyeing my hair crazy colors for years was literally the smartest thing I ever did. Like, I was just doing it for fun because I saw a model. Do you remember Abby Lee Kershaw?
Yes.
She did this Vogue campaign and she had pink tips in her hair. And I was like, that is the coolest. If I dye my hair, I'm going to look like her. Definitely didn't happen. But like it was cool, and it just ended up being and still is a massive like point of difference for my brand. And I think in a world where everything is so oversaturated, to create a visual point of difference as well as, you know, a musical point of difference, et cetera, is really, really important.
Well, even just in your photography, like in your photos, when you look at your Instagram, your hair is so your brand. Like, it's amazing. And you see those images and you're like, oh, wow. And it really makes you stand out as well in such a huge crowd of people.
Yeah.
It shows that you're almost really owning that space. So yeah, well done for that. I love it.
It's actually been interesting because I had blue hair not naturally, but it was my real hair for years and years and years. And then it all started to fall out. So I kind of was in like recovery mode for a while and just went like brownie blondie. And only in the past, I would say 6 months, have I been wearing all these amazing wigs to my shows and photo shoots and stuff and really trying to own that, because I realized that like that was such a big part of my brand. And people literally like cried when I changed my hair.
Oh my
so
goodness.
Mental. Like, they don't realize that it was impossible to keep up because of like my hair was literally just falling out.
Yeah.
But people really attached they get really attached to things really quickly, and they were really attached to the concept of me having colourful hair and being a DJ.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Love it. So good. So good.
Love how, rather than chasing management, you decided to just follow what you're passionate about and what you really love doing. For us, we've only been launched for, 3 or 4 weeks, our podcast, and people keep saying to us, what are you going to do? How are you going to monetize your podcast? And what's next? And we're a little bit like, we're just having so much fun doing what we're doing. We don't need to go and chase management or anything like that. It's a passion for us. It's a hobby. And we hope it continues like that for a long time.
And I think all that stuff can come and will come when the time is right. But people these days, it's very bizarre. They just have some sort of like expectation that you can't be successful without a manager and an agent. And I manage myself now. I had a manager for years and it ended up not working out, unfortunately, but the best thing I did was step away from that relationship and really look after me in like the whole scheme of things. And I think that artists and podcasters and whoever, athletes, models, can really get used and abused by agencies and management, and I think it's really important that you guys focus on, you know, just what you're doing and have fun with it.
Yeah,
it's meant
totally.
To be fun.
It's so true, and the advice that you give is just so perfect. And one of the other guests we had said exactly the same thing, like if you're actually embarking on something to get rich, like you're never going to be successful from it. Like there needs to be that passion and that drive and that love for what you're doing.
Yeah.
So yeah, congratulations to you for creating that.
Oh, thanks, girls.
So you're an avid supporter of health and fitness. With such a demanding schedule and regular overseas travel, how do you stay true to your health and wellness goals?
Oh, these are big loaded questions, aren't they?
Get straight into it.
Lots of things, I suppose. First and foremost, diet. I'm pretty openly speaking about the fact that I'm vegan on my Instagram. I've kind of pulled back a little bit because I've got quite a bit of backlash, you know. It's a very interesting space, social media, at the moment, but that's fine. And I think being vegan, having like a plant food, plant-based diet, has been a key to being healthy, especially on the road. I can't even begin to tell you like how much my health has changed and how much my energy's changed and my skin's changed and all this stuff has changed since changing my diet. The DJ lifestyle is really unhealthy. It's drinking, it's late nights, it's airplanes. So you're stuffing up your sleep, you're stuffing up your body clock, you're stuffing up like where you are meant to be like in the world. You know, alcohol is so bad for you. But really, you can kind of counteract that by having a really healthy diet and by eating foods that are really good for you and really nourish you. And it's all about balance. So yeah, I suppose that is one of the things that's really helped me when like traveling and having like a really busy lifestyle. Another thing would be all my routines that I've kind of adopted over the years. I've got so many different things that I do at different times depending on how I'm feeling. I recently, like maybe 2 months ago, released an ebook talking about like every single thing that I kind of do. I actually already need to update it because these routines are something that change so rapidly depending on what kind of stage you are in your life. So just to name a couple, like I wake up and I oil pull with like coconut oil and some essential oil, maybe like peppermint or one called Thieves from Young Living. And then I'll like scrape my tongue, brush my teeth, and then like rinse my mouth out with water and this Thieves oil, which is really good for like preventing sickness and colds and stuff like that.
I have that oil at home.
Oh, how good is
it's
it?
It's really good.
Oh my God, it's my life. Do you like gargle with it or use it in oil pulling?
Yeah. I actually have the Young Living brand and I have some doTERRA oils as well. So I swap and change depending on what mood I'm in.
Yeah.
But the Thieves oil is awesome.
Yeah, it's so great. So I do stuff like that. And then I always have like a 2-minute cold shower after my hot shower. Like things like this, I know that sounds really crazy, but when you're really jet lagged and you've just like woken up in this random city and you're super tired, like nothing wakes you up and makes you feel more energized than a really freezing cold shower.
I've actually been trying to do that in the mornings because I've stopped drinking coffee. I turn and I have really hot showers, like way too hot for my body.
Me
but
too.
They're amazing and they get me out of bed. But I've been turning the shower to cold, not for 2 minutes. I can't do that long, but it's honestly like having a cup of coffee. Like it wakes me up more than a cup of coffee.
Oh, it's crazy. And it's addictive as well.
Yeah.
Like the other day I accidentally forgot to do it and I got back in the shower and did it because I felt bad. I can't get out of the shower without blasting myself. And not only does it wake you up, it like tightens your skin. If you're bloated, it decreases your bloat. It like brightens your eyes. God, it like literally helps everything. Yeah. Can we just stop for a second? Yeah. Why did you give up coffee? Because I'm fully addicted and I need some help. Look, guys, I've just had a coffee and it's 4:30 in the afternoon.
I just was getting really bad anxiety from it and I don't usually suffer or struggle with anxiety, but it was just really, yeah, I'd have a coffee and my stomach would just be in a knot and I would feel like I was just a million miles an hour. Yeah, so I knew, like, from the very start, I used to work at a coffee shop and I never really drank it till then, and I started drinking it at, like, in uni at a coffee shop, and I knew from the get-go that it wasn't good for me. I could just feel in my body that I'm like, and then so I started doing some research on it, and yeah, I just know that it's not all female bodies, you know, should be drinking coffee. It can actually be quite dangerous. And when I read that, I just thought, you know what, I actually think I'm that type of person, because it never sits well with me. I get really snappy. The thing is, I just love the taste. Oh, so yeah, I did. I think it took me maybe 7 days to really get out of the habit. So I started drinking matcha, green tea, and I would have that as my latte in the mornings. And yeah, now it's just, as soon as I lost the habit, it was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now I just, when I do have it, sometimes I'm like on the weekend, I'm like, oh, treat myself, I'll have it. And it's just, yeah, not it's a good not, idea. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I still drink coffee.
Yeah.
I probably have one now every 2 days, but okay. I've switched to matcha as well a lot, and I find that it really helps with my energy levels. Mm. The only thing is that Melbourne and Geelong are still catching up with how to make a matcha because I bought one yesterday after a meeting and it was so foul that I couldn't drink it. So that's the only problem, is that it's hit and miss with, you have to know where to go to buy it.
I think it's like, honestly, the biggest part of it is like the habitual part of like, we live next to this great coffee shop and like you walk up and you know the baristas and you see the locals and you know, you take your coffee. Like for me, I work at home like Monday to Friday, take the coffee back home, sit there, look over my emails, plan out my day. Then by the time I finish my coffee, I'm pinging and ready to rock and I'm like, let's go.
Do you know what though? If your body's handling it, which my body can,
I don't think it does though. I don't know.
I go through stages.
Yeah, it depends. Like I've got quite a few gut issues, and when my gut is happy, I can handle the coffee. Mm. When my gut isn't happy, I want the coffee more, but I can't handle the coffee.
And I find if I have eaten a lot, like say if I've got up and had my fresh juice and then had like eggs or like something quite substantial, and then I have a coffee straight away with the food, I can be quite okay.
Yes.
It's if I'm got empty a day stomach. When I'm, empty stomach, or I'm really already got a bit of adrenaline going through me because I've got a busy day, I just know that that's not a good time for me to have a coffee. So now if I'm going to have one, it's usually on a Sunday when I'm like at home and not doing much, because I'm like, even if I get that jittery feeling, it's okay. But it's really annoying because my fiance is the opposite. He loves coffee but doesn't drink it on a weekend. We're like, we do the opposite.
I've noticed exactly the same. If I have something really like nourishing and like filling before, like a bowl of oats or something, and then I have a coffee, it's fine. It doesn't affect my stomach. It doesn't affect my like jitteriness. But if I have it on an empty stomach, it can be like instant like jitters.
Same here, I think. Let's go back to your diet.
Yes.
And deciding, making the switch to becoming a vegan.
Yeah.
Did it take a little while for you to find out what works for your body and how to have the right plant-based food to be able to keep your energy levels up? Or talk us through the process of becoming a vegan.
I'm still on that journey now, 2 years in. And I think that's the awesome part of it. It is a journey. Like, it's never going to be perfect. I accidentally ate a whole milk chocolate Easter bunny the other day for Easter. And I thought it was vegan chocolate. Like, so clearly we all make mistakes all the time. And that's totally okay.
Yeah.
The reason why I don't talk about it a huge amount is because the vegan community is really judgmental and harsh on other vegans. And so I try and just sit back and do my own thing. But in saying that, at the beginning, I really wanted to do it for years. Backtrack to when I was like 4 or 5 years old and we had Christmas dinner. And you know how Christmas dinner, you have ham and lamb and all the meats and stuff. I really didn't want to eat it. So what I would do is I would chew it a little bit and then spit it into my hand, throw it under my chair. And I got in so much trouble because obviously there's a pile of meat under my chair. Oh my goodness. But like, I just didn't want to eat it. Anyway, because I got in trouble, obviously it was banged into me that I needed to eat it. And then it was only probably about 3 years ago that I started really questioning what I was doing and why I was eating animal product. And I kind of flitted between pescatarian and vegetarian for a couple of months here, a couple of months there, trying what it was and seeing what I liked. And I was pescatarian for quite a while. But one of the big things was dairy just really didn't agree with my body. And to be honest, it doesn't agree with anyone's bodies. Like, we're not meant to eat dairy. And so I was like, well, if I'm not eating meat and I'm not eating dairy, like, what's the fish thing? And then I started to look into fish and like how badly we're fishing out our oceans. And actually, to be honest, how much like plastic is in fish that we consume and how much mercury is in fish and all this stuff. And I was like, wow, information overload. And I remember quite a few of my cousins are vegan. And I remember on New Year's Eve one day having this like really awesome chat with one of my cousins. And everything she just said made so much sense and it just felt so right. And I was like, you know what? I've been thinking about this for so long. I'm just going to give it a go. And so, yeah, I started doing it and that was, what, 2.5 years ago. And I've definitely had plenty of slip-ups and made mistakes and eaten things that I thought were vegan or and they haven't been vegan. And, like, that's totally fine. It's part of the process. I think the hardest thing to give up was probably, I'm going to say cheese, because I really liked cheese, even though it made me really sick. And it's such a social food as well. But just like the coffee thing, like we were talking about before, it's all about finding replacements. There's so many vegan cheeses now. Mm-hmm. Now when everyone's having, I'm like make up a big cheese platter for all my friends. I'm a bad vegan. I go and buy like meat for my boyfriend and cheese for my friends when they come over. But you know, you can't be forcing your views on other people, I think. So I'll go buy them all their cheese and salami and whatever. And then I'll get like my vegan baba ganoush and my vegan hummus and my vegan cheese and my vegan crackers. And like, it's great. You still have the best spread and it's all, you know, totally without any animal product. And another thing I just like to add to that is I think part of the challenge about eating plant-based is like preparation and knowledge. So I get blood tests every 6 months to check on my levels. I supplement. I train a lot, so I supplement. If I didn't train, I probably wouldn't supplement. But I take a whole host of different things depending on how I'm feeling and what type of training I'm doing at that time. And then it's also about being prepared. So like looking up cafes, menus, and like BYOing your own snacks when you're like at the airport and stuff. And you know what? At sometimes it is a struggle. Like sometimes when I'm over in Europe or America, I will literally be eating chips or a bread roll because that's all there is. But I think, you know, you make up for other times when you're eating delicious food.
Yeah.
It really frustrates me that you feel as though the vegan community can be quite judgmental, because I feel like you should never push the way that you eat or your lifestyle or your diet on anyone else, because what works for someone's body definitely won't work for you know, mine or anyone else's. So I think it's great that you're so level-headed and you just follow what your body tells you and how you feel, and that you go and buy meat and cheese for your friends.
A funny story. So maybe 4 or 5 months ago, I landed back from America in the morning, and that day we picked up the keys to our new house and got a new puppy. So it was a very full-on day. Landed at 6 a.m., had the puppy at 7, and got the keys at 9. It was a big day. Anyway, I was in the process later that afternoon packing up some stuff from like my old house to take to my new house, and this pair of boots arrived on my doorstep, and they're amazing, like snake print. Thigh high, incredible, just like wow. Anyway, I put them on my Instagram. I was like, oh my god, shout out to this brand, these boots are so cool, thank you. Didn't think to look what they were made from because I'm too busy packing and looking after a puppy who's pooping on my carpet. Anyway, they were leather boots, and I literally got so bullied and so harassed by these crazy people online thinking it was okay. I didn't even know they were leather. Like, obviously, like, whatever, but, like, it was just such a full-on experience, and obviously completely my fault because it was a massive oversight, but there's so much that goes into the vegan experience that's not just food. It's like clothing and like not buying fast fashion. It's like not buying leather. It's like not drinking wine because most wine isn't vegan. Mm-hmm. That's actually something that I don't do that is bad of me from like a strict vegan perspective, is like I drink a lot of wine and often it doesn't say or not on the bottle whether it is or not.
Mm-hmm.
But look, you have to like kind of pick your fights. So I've actually been saying lately I'm like plant-based, which more refers to your diet.
Yes.
As opposed to, you know, the leather boots that I'm getting crucified for online. Yeah. Or I have this like old handbag. It's my only designer handbag. I don't buy designer stuff ever. I'm just not that type of girl. And it's leather. But I got it like 4 years ago, 5 years ago as a gift. So I'm still going to use it and enjoy it. But I think a lot of people are under the impression that I should like throw out all my leather goods.
Yeah,
I think that's quite wasteful, you know.
Totally.
So I don't know. Like, we could sit here talking about it for hours.
Yeah,
there's
totally
so much to talk about and so much to think about. But my overarching opinion with it all is just do what you can when you can and like listen to your body.
Yeah, totally. I think that's great advice because we were even talking in an earlier podcast with one of the guests about, you know, she was really trying to limit chemicals in her house. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've kind of gone quite heavily down the health path of not eating preservatives and those sort of things. But, like, I'm bad with chemicals in my home. And it's sometimes it just comes down to convenience and what's 100%. There. Like, I've got literally Aldi next door to me. So it's like those, when my lifestyle is still so busy and chaotic, it's like, I know that I don't want to be using chemicals, but at the same time, it's like I can only do what I can actually do right now. So it's picking what you actually have space and time for and is going to like allow you to feel good right now, but not making yourself feel guilty or bad for not doing the rest. I think it's really being kind to yourself in that way and being like, you know, well, good on you for like focusing so much on your health or being plant-based. But it's okay to not have the full picture yet.
Yes. 100%. Perfect, and take away the labels.
That chemical thing as well. Like all of these, like facets are massive, like rabbit holes that are just when you start exploring them. I've just started exploring the chemical thing.
Yeah.
Whew.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness! And it's a slow process, swapping everything out. Like. And it's time consuming.
And it costs money.
Even at the moment, I'm trying to do like plastic-free July. And I'm doing it, but my boyfriend's like, no, you're not. There's still so much plastic in the house. I'm like, I know, but like some things you can't, like tampons. Had my period the other day.
Yeah.
How are you supposed to do your period without using plastic?
Yeah.
Like toothpaste, it always comes in a plastic thing. Anyway, now apparently I was listening to a girl on Triple J who's also doing Plastic Free July, and she was making her own toothpaste from bicarb, peppermint, and coconut oil. So that'll be my next thing. But I was just like, I had no idea, like that you could even DIY your own toothpaste, you know? So, and once again, it's really time consuming to do all this stuff. So it's about picking and choosing what you can do.
Yeah, absolutely. Can we just go back a step? I'd love to hear a few more of your tips for when you're traveling, because I think there's probably a lot of people that are listening that travel a lot for work or stuff. So love the shower one and your coconut pulling, but do you have any more little healthy hacks?
Yeah, so I think jet lag is a big one when you're traveling. My main hacks for jet lag, number one is exercise. So even if it's like a 20-minute walk in the gym or anything to kind of get your body moving, get your heart rate up and get yourself sweating, I think that's really good. Actually, going outside and physically like looking, not at the sun, but like getting your eyes to see the light is such a big one for your body to adjust to the time zone. Also the meal thing, eating the meals, like if it's breakfast time, go and eat a real breakfast meal. If it's dinner time and you feel like lunch, don't go and have some toast, go and have something that's really dinner vibe. So it gets your body in that space. And then in addition, I like to use a couple of different products. I've got the Salt Lab magnesium spray, which I spray on the bottoms of my feet before I go to sleep. And that's really good for like training recovery, but it's also really good for like sleep and jet lag recovery. And I take a melatonin supplement when I'm traveling, if I need it, if I feel like I need it. And I'm not totally sold on the melatonin thing. because some nights it'll knock me out in 1 minute and then other nights I'll be awake for 5 hours, jet lagged, lying in bed. But look, anything you can do helps. Yeah. And then finally, I always take my little oil diffuser with me and just put like lavender oil in to that and like put it on like my wrists or my temples, that kind of thing. So there's lots of different things that you can do, and that's kind of just what works for me. And I'm sure there's like a zillion other hacks out there as well.
Yeah, no, I really like all of those ones. Mm. I love those just little healthy habits that you can start doing when you're traveling and, you know, or at home in the day. It just makes such a difference to your overall health, I think.
100%.
So you also positively support mental health awareness as the ambassador for Lifeline. Mm-hmm. What are some of the tools or practices that you regularly use to keep your own mental well-being in check?
So much stuff. I'm crazy. Oh, my poor boyfriend. Lots of different things. So I think number one, exercise. As soon as I stop moving, I go crazy, literally. So I have to do something every day. And as soon as I have like 1 to 2 days off, I really notice a difference in the way I'm feeling and like my hormones and all of that stuff. I just start going crazy. So that's the number one. Number two is meditation for sure. This is a savior when you're feeling anxious or you're feeling nervous or you're about to go to a meeting. Or the other day I was just sat at my computer for too long and I needed a break, so I meditated for 10 minutes and went for a walk, and you just change completely. Yeah, it's pretty fundamentally important, I think, for everyone's daily practice. Journaling is another really big one. I think I like to do it a lot, especially when I'm traveling, because I know that when I travel I get a lot more anxious and a lot more panicky and stressed. So when I'm traveling, I probably meditate for like an hour a day and journal at least twice a day. But when I'm at home normally, I don't do it anywhere near as much because I'm a lot more calm and centered and relaxed, which is great. But when I'm stressed or anxious, I know like straight away that's my go-to. And then also I think it's really important to have like people that you can talk to about these things. One of my really good friends is like a Reiki healer. And she's always someone that I can go to for anything, to just word vomit at, or I go have a session with her. And it's about having these people that you have a close connection to that you can see not only as a friend, but also as like a support system and as a tool for you to use when you really need it. Mm-hmm. So Reiki has been like really amazing for my mental health and my just overall like emotional stability whenever I'm feeling a little bit spun out. I book in an appointment and go see her, and it's like having your like emotions and your brain like brushed out. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I really love Reiki. I had my first appointment, I think it would have been about 6 months ago now, and my Reiki healer has just had twins. And I'm like, oh my God, when am I going to see her next?
Because so bad.
She makes me feel so good. Yeah. And I think of her as my fairy godmother in a way as well, because she's so wise and she tells me lots of different things. Mm. So I know it, whenever I'm feeling off or I do the same as you, I call her straight away. So what meditation do you love?
So I do the one like mantra meditation. I've never done like a full on like transcendental course or anything like that. My meditation journey started like a few years ago using Headspace. The orange app. And I like got through everything on the app and I was like, okay, I need something else now. So funnily enough, as the universe has it, one of my friends kind of started a meditation course, and that was like mantra meditation. So we were actually in Japan. He was my tour manager and photographer, and he was like, all right, cool, let's like teach you properly. And so he gave me my mantra, and now that's what I do. But I do a combination of that and then also using a guided app. So I've got Simple Habit at the moment, which I quite like. I flitted and flirted between a few different apps. And I think it's actually quite important to do a combination of guided and your own stuff, just because you can kind of lose track of what the whole point is if you're just sitting there with your mantra for 20 minutes day in, day out. And I really like how on the apps, the guided meditations like have options that suit whatever mood you're in.
Yeah.
Like there's SOS or there's like
Butterfly is a really good one.
Okay, I flirted with that one for a while. But they just have like, you know, on the way to work or like eating or cooking or going through a stressful period or whatever it might be, acceptance, body love, all this stuff. And so you can just click on it and be like, yeah, I'm going to do that today.
I was going to say that I think the best thing with that is because with the guided ones and you're choosing the mood you're in, it's actually so zoned into what you're feeling at that time. So it's like if you're, you know, it's a busy day and you're struggling to sleep, like the guided meditation will really say, it's okay if your thought, you know, your mind is drifting off, bring it back and center it. And it's like, it seems to always be, they say it as your mind's drifting off and you're like, oh yeah, oh yeah, it is. And I think it helps to really bring you back and allow it to feel like a worthwhile time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think this is really useful because for our listeners, because we've actually been getting a lot of questions about like, well, if I haven't meditated, like how do I actually do it? So yeah, I think the apps are 100% such a incredible starting point. Like I still use them every day and I meditate daily, so I think they're great.
I'll link you guys to my friend's course. It's called Mindspo. I haven't obviously done it, but like I practice their form of meditation and I love it. And there's also something else I'll give you guys a link to that you can put like in the show notes.
Awesome.
Which is called Yoga Nidra, and it's yoga, it's meditation for sleep. And honestly, there's this one thing by this girl. I haven't found it on like a podcast app and I don't even know what her name is. It's just on Google and it's amazing. It's 20 minutes and it's never not worked.
Wow.
Like, which is pretty crazy. Yeah, really cool. It always works. The first time I listened to it, I reckon I was out within like 90 seconds.
Oh, I'll have to give that one a try. I think it's also worth mentioning for anyone looking for an app, Oprah and Deepak every couple of months bring out a free 21-day meditating experience, and it opens up in the next couple of days. I think it's on the 20 something of this month. So if you go onto the app store, you can just look up Oprah and Deepak's 21-day meditation experience or something like that, and you'll be able to sign up and follow the 21-day meditation. That one's really great as well.
That's great. How good, Deepak Chopra?
So good.
On Spotify, like, oh my goodness, that's just like my go-to, the like soul affirmations of healing. Oh, that album is just amazing.
Now, your role as a Lifeline ambassador is something you take extremely serious due to your own struggles with an eating disorder and anxiety in your teens. What tips would you give to someone who is struggling with anxiety or potentially going through an eating disorder at the moment?
Very different for both of those things.
Yeah.
I think anxiety is pretty, it's quite straightforward. It's kind of everything we've been talking about. Move your body, meditate, journal, reach out to the people around you, listen to the good podcasts, look up Deepak Chopra and listen to his affirmations, that kind of stuff. It's more like lifestyle, finding what works for your lifestyle and incorporating that into a daily practice. And time is like the best thing for healing that kind of stuff, for me anyway, in my personal opinion. I'm quite against like medication and all that kind of stuff. In regards to eating disorders, I would 100% say go and get help, like ASAP. Like, that is not a battle that you want to be fighting on your own, and it like ruins families and it ruins friendships, and they're so incredibly common. It's really crazy and really sad. So I like struggled for a couple of years between, say, the ages of like 14 and 17 or something. And I remember going and getting help because it was the start of my HSC year. And I really had this score. I wanted to get above 98. That was like my goal. And I started the year and I had like this score on my wall, like as a visual, like board, you know, of like things that I was, what's the word? Like a vision board. Yeah. And I kept like seeing this vision board that I created and all this amazing stuff, but like being so bogged down in my mind of thinking I was fat and ugly and not good enough. And it was just so hard to focus on the actual goal because my mind was somewhere else and just so obsessed with like how I looked and my weight. It was so, so crappy. So I just went to my mom and I was just bawling my eyes out, being like, I need help. Like, this is so bad. Can we find someone? And she was like, yep, I know the right person. So funnily enough, thank you, universe. Like, maybe a few years before that, my sister, sorry, Georgina, if you're listening to this, she used to be like an obsessive thumb sucker.
Oh, I was a thumb sucker.
Were you? Yes. Yeah. Well, she was an obsessive thumb sucker, and like, she needed to get rid of it, like, before she went to high school. Mm-hmm. So mum took her to a hypnotherapist. One session, she just stopped sucking her thumb.
Wow.
Pretty amazing, goodness. Considering it was, wow, in her mouth 24/7.
Yeah, and it's such a bad habit. Like, I wouldn't even... It sounds so silly, but I got to the point, I did it until grade 5, and going into grade 6, my mum was like, you are not starting, like, grade 6 and then high school sucking your thumb. And it was actually the point where I was so unaware that my thumb was actually in my mouth at times, like, because it was just such an obsession that I didn't even realize I was doing it.
How
it was crazy.
Start?
I think just the fear of going, like getting to grade 6 and going to high school. And I was like, oh, and I got a boyfriend in grade 5. So, ooh, like, I was like, oh yeah, I've got a boyfriend. I can't suck my thumb.
I'm cool.
But it was actually at the point that I didn't want to. It was just such a habit.
Yeah. Totally. Anyway, so I went and saw this hypnotherapist. She's also a psychologist. So she's kind of both. And we worked together for probably 6 months. Doing, or maybe it wasn't even 6 months, I don't remember, maybe like 3 or 4 months, doing a session every fortnight or so, and a combination of, like, kind of counseling, like talking about everything and the root of the problem, and then doing hypnotherapy. And she, like, literally saved my life. Like, I sometimes go back to her when I feel myself maybe slipping into a bad state of mind, whether it be an anxious state of mind or like a self-deprecating state of mind. And she just, like, levels me out straight away. It's pretty amazing, the power of that hypnotherapy and, like, you know, how it can heal you. But the one thing about that treatment is you need to want to get better, because she's working on your subconscious, or working with your subconscious mind. And if your subconscious mind doesn't want to get better, if it's attached to that eating disorder, then there's no chance of it working. But whether it's hypnotherapy or whether it's counseling or whatever it might be, like, I would suggest for, like, young girls or any girls, go get help. Because I've got friends now that were sick in high school and still have a really unhealthy relationship with food and with their body. And it's really sad. And, like, don't get me wrong, we all have shit days. I messaged my boyfriend the other day being like, look at this photo of this girl. She looks so skinny and tall and beautiful. And he just didn't even write back. He's like, what are you talking about? Like, hello, you're gorgeous. Yeah. Shut up.
Yeah.
And I think that the world that we live in with social media, we can definitely slip into moments.
Comparisons.
Yeah, of comparing ourselves. And that's totally fine. That's not an eating disorder, though, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's really important to acknowledge the difference, and also to acknowledge practices that are really harming you mentally. I went through a phase where I unfollowed every single girl on Instagram that made me feel bad about myself.
Yeah.
And it was so good. No skinny models, no fake boobs, no 10 packs with fake boobs, skinny models. Like, none of it. Like, it's just so unreal, you know?
Yeah.
And it makes you feel so shit about yourself. So I think it's also about monitoring your practices and what you're doing in your daily life. And you know what? I'm on Instagram too much.
Yeah.
For sure. It's something that I need to work on more. But, you know, that's part of life.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of part of your job in a way.
Yeah, I know. How annoying. Can't wait till I can delete it.
Did it take you a while to realize that you had an eating disorder, or was it something that, you know, it started really gradually, or how did you figure it out?
I remember when it started. I remember that first moment. It's so weird. I was sitting at the computer working on some schoolwork, and Mum always used to make the best desserts. Like butterscotch apple dumplings.
Oh,
she made them the other night vegan. They
yeah.
were so good. Puddings, all this beautiful stuff, like homemade yummy food.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what it was. She was like, do you want some of this dessert? And I was just like, no. And I just remember yelling out, being like, no, I don't want any. And thinking, I'm not allowed to have that. Like, I don't deserve that. I can't have that. Like, I need to get skinny.
Yeah.
And I don't know how old I was, but I just remember that moment and that thought, you know, that thought pattern. And I don't think I realized then what it was, but when it started to fully take over my behavior, I was really deceitful. Like, Mum would, as we were talking about the lunches and stuff before, she'd pack up these beautiful lunches and I would, like, throw it all out and just eat an apple. Oh my God, it breaks my heart thinking like of Mum spending all this time and effort putting, like, healthy meals together.
Yeah.
And, like, when I started to have that really deceitful behavior, my friends started to notice, and then obviously I got skinny really quickly because I was running heaps and eating nothing. And yeah, I think I became aware pretty quickly that you know, some of my friends said stuff to me. My mom and dad were so angry with me just because, like, I'd been such a beautiful girl my whole life. And then all of a sudden, like, thinking I needed to be this stick figure. Yeah. So, yeah, I think I realized pretty quickly. But it was a hard realization to come to terms with. Mm-hmm. And I had great support, but I still don't think I had enough knowledge and awareness. There was nothing like this. There were no podcasts that you could go on to. I still wasn't really on the internet a huge amount. Like, I'd just be on MSN or MySpace. Like, I didn't really see it as, like, a place where I could learn about what was going on inside my brain.
Yeah.
So I think education is definitely the key.
It's kind of scary these days, I guess, though, that kids have so much access to the internet and to other people, and, like, you know, that whole comparing and seeing girls that they kind of aspire to be like and they have to be a certain way is quite scary, because I think, you know, like, I went to school with quite a few girls actually that suffered from anorexia, and it was horrible to see. But and I think back and I'm think how, you know, back then we had no access. Like, we grew up in this tiny little coastal town. Like, we had no access to, like, the internet or social media or anything. So it's, yeah, it's quite frightening these days to think how much people have to view other people's life and to, you know, look at all these Fitspo models, I guess, on Instagram and stuff. It's, yeah.
It's definitely a wake-up call to make you think about when you have kids, like, what I will let them do and expose them to, knowing how detrimental it can be. But then there's all these amazing women out there. I love those profiles. I should start doing this. Like, me, also me,
cute.
And one is, like, bloated after eating two pizzas, and the other one's, like, in the morning when you wake up with a six-pack feeling so sexy. Like, awesome. I love stuff like that.
I know. So it's so nice to see that there is so many girls out there really championing that self-love and body confidence and showing that, like, you know, yeah, there's this crazy glamorous side to Instagram and these worlds, but there's also a real side of, you know, people who still have to get up in the morning and have bags under their eyes and look tired.
Totally.
It's something that I've been thinking about a lot lately, and I was actually talking to my husband about it last night. It's school holidays at the moment, and my 8-year-old little girl Lily has been watching the iPad too much, and you can tell at the end of the holidays she gets really agitated and almost a little addicted to it. And she, I have to really check in and say, what are you actually watching? Because she watches a lot of the YouTube vloggers, I guess, and
they love that stuff, don't they?
Love it. And there are a lot of Americans, and it can be a little bit on the edge of being inappropriate. It's not, you know, full on inappropriate, but I think, oh, there's some things that she says now that has given me the alarm bells, I guess, to check in a little bit more. Even on our way here, she had a little meltdown and said, Mum, I need to wear black. People in Melbourne wear black. And I was like,
it's true, she's right. People in Melbourne wear black.
Yeah. And I was like, it's definitely not, you know, at all the same thing, but just that she's conscious, my eight-year-old little girl, of what she's wearing to Melbourne. It scared me a little bit, to be honest. And so that's my mission in the next couple of months, to really take ownership of what she's wearing and just a bit more, a bit more conscious of it, I guess.
And I think, I don't know because I'm not a mum, but this is what I think, maybe. The key is to making them not want to be on it. Make other things cooler.
Yes.
Like, give them some sort of awesome option where they can go and, like, I don't know what it is, go and do surfing lessons and hang out with cute boys, or, like, go to, like, a class where they can design their own clothes, or just cool, like, really cool stuff. Sure, it might be expensive, it might be time consuming, but, like, actually make them want to get out of there.
Yeah.
Because, like, as soon as they start to think watching all this stuff is cool.
I completely agree with you, and actually don't tell anyone. Well, I'm really telling everyone. Lily and I are starting singing lessons together next Thursday, which is so dorky.
That is the cutest thing I've ever heard in my whole life.
Well, it's because, you know, I actually really love singing, and I'm never going to sing to anyone, by the way. But I thought, and she loves singing, so I thought, look, let's just learn how to sing together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taken me a little while. She does gymnastics, but it's taken me ages to be able to get her out of her comfort zone to try something else. And as you said, just do an activity, something different to get her out of the house and off the iPad.
Yeah.
I think we need to do more of that.
But you know what? It relates to everything. Like, my boyfriend and I were saying to each other the other day, let's go do something together. Like, because you get to a stage where like you come into this routine, he comes home from work, I cook dinner, we have dinner, we go to bed, and then you end up just like bickering and like not making like worthwhile time together.
Yeah.
So like we might start rock climbing or salsa dancing or pottery classes.
Yeah.
He suggested pottery classes actually. I was like, yes, let's do pottery classes. Like just something to do stuff together and spend time together without like being glued to your phone or the TV or the iPad or whatever sort of like tech it is.
Yeah, totally. I think that's so important. My fiance and I have a bit of a joke when we get to that point. We'll just say to each other, oh, so just housemates at the moment, are we? Because it like it gets to that feeling where you're like...
That's what Scott says to me.
Yeah. But we do. And it's almost just that reminder as soon as one of us says it to each other, it's like, okay, we're both aware of the fact now that we are. We're literally just coming home from busy days. We like both, you know, work for ourselves. So it's like we're on the computer late at night and, you know, we'll eat dinner and we'll go to bed. And it's like half the time we don't even get through how each other's day was because we're both too exhausted to talk about our day that we had. So yeah, it is like having, that's our little trigger point of like, okay, that means this weekend we need to, yeah, go and ride our bikes or get out, like just get out in nature. We'll go and do a big walk somewhere and just be together again and reconnect and find that bit of fun. So I think it's, yeah, really important in any relationship.
And it can just be as easy as going for a walk, can't it? Just getting out of the house, walking down the street.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be difficult.
Or matcha or whatever
Yeah, totally. That's like last weekend I was really sick and we had just such a lazy Sunday on the couch and it was like 6 o'clock and it was so cold and it was dark in Melbourne and Ryan was just like, let's get off the couch and just go for a walk. And it's so funny how quickly it just changes your whole like mindset and feeling and just that fresh air on your face. And it's like, okay, I'm so glad we did this. We'll go on for 10 minutes, but it's just like resets you. And
do you have a dog?
No, let's not talk about dogs because I really want a bulldog.
Oh my gosh, honestly. So we got a dog 5 months ago. And he's changed our lives in the fact that twice a day, no matter what, unless it's storming, he gets walked.
Yeah.
And that's like 20 to 40 minutes twice a day of us getting up, moving our bodies, going outside. Whether we go together or whether we go separately, like it doesn't really matter. It's like getting out in the fresh air and just moving and connecting with the dog, with the boyfriend, with the people at the park. Like, yeah, it's really changed our routine and I cannot even bear to think how lazy we'd be without Lenny.
Before we let you go, we'd love to ask you some of our favorite questions. What would be your number one health tip?
That's really hard. Ooh, number one health tip. I think my number one health tip is just to move your body. However that looks for you, it doesn't matter whether it's a 5 to 10 minute walk around the block or it's a hectic session at F45 this morning like I did. I think it's super important, not only for like your body, but just for your mental health, which is, you know, intrinsically linked to every other decision you make throughout the day.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah, that is great. I have two things that I try to do every day is as soon as I wake up, I need to hydrate my body because I think, well, I've been sleeping for 8 hours, so I'm probably quite dehydrated, and to move. Either that means in the lounge room just doing star jumps, which I literally do some mornings, or, going to the gym. So, yeah, that's a good one. And what is something that we can all do to bring more balance to our life so the hustle can be healthy?
Eat more plants. It's so easy and it makes everything so much better. By like nourishing your body with the right stuff, it changes the way your brain functions, it changes the way your body functions, it changes the way you sleep and the way that you move. If I was like hustling these days on my old diet, I wouldn't be here, literally. I wouldn't be here. It just wasn't sustainable. Like eating the stereotypical American diet.
Oh, yeah.
There's some sort of like funny word for that. So yeah, I think it's really easy to eat more plants and to do like a couple of days vegan or veggie or however it looks for you.
Yeah.
But nourishing yourself with like organic, fresh, simple meals, vegetables, because like if you do that, like it's going to change the way that you feel and like the amount of energy and stuff you have to put toward your hustle.
Yeah, that's a great one. And what advice would you give to your younger self?
We're talking about this before. Yeah, yeah. The advice I would give to my younger self is to look after your health and invest in your health. I was always just, look, we all go through a party phase and that's cool. I just always think, what could I have done if I would have pulled my, what's it called? Line my ducklings up or something a bit earlier. If I would have invested in my health a bit earlier, I wonder like what my career would look like now. But like for me, I had like some like scary health, like wake up calls. Like you really need to sort out your health. Otherwise you're not going to be able to do your job. So if I would say that to my younger self, I would say, invest in that nutritionist and in that yoga class and like stop drinking so much and eat more plants and drink more water. And you can still go out and you can still do all the fun stuff, but you know, you just need to like readjust that balance a little bit.
I'm going to change it up a little bit here because I'm just really interested in this question. What is your biggest career highlight to date? Or tell us maybe the three.
Yeah, okay. Can I tell you a couple things?
Yeah, tell us a couple.
So playing Tomorrowland was pretty epic.
What year did you play?
I played 2 years ago.
So that went to that festival. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Yeah. And then having my own headline show at Hakkasan in Las Vegas. It's like one of the biggest clubs in Las Vegas. And playing like my own night there was pretty mental. Wow. Having a song reach number one on the Beatport charts. Beatport is, it's like iTunes, but for dance music, any sort of genre. And like I did a song called Invisible Children with a producer called Kashmir. And it was sitting on number one for maybe like 3 weeks. And that was pretty mental.
Awesome.
And you know what? Even like 4 days ago, my podcast hit number one on the like music charts in Australia.
Oh,
Beat Triple J. Yes.
Yeah.
Which is so good. So like, you know, but it's like, it's also like, I remember the first moment that I got to play like a headline set at Soho, which is this, it's closed down now, but it used to be this like amazing institution of a club in Sydney. It was just like for 18 to 21 people who liked to party. Yeah. And I remember thinking, 6 months ago I was in the crowd like as a punter and now I'm on the stage. This is the coolest thing ever. So look, it's all a highlight, you know.
Oh, that's so good. I love that you take those moments, you know, to really reflect on, you know, like, wow, I'm actually the one on the stage now. Like, I think everyone can take a little bit from that. And no matter what you, where you are or what you're doing right now, like there are so many wow moments in our life if you kind of allow that moment to realize them.
Yeah, 100%. It's all about the small wins.
Yes.
You know, I posted something on my Instagram not that long ago and it was a caption that was kind of saying like you celebrate the small things because at the end of the day, if you don't really recognize those wins as a big win, you'll get to the end and you'll be sitting in your like penthouse apartment with like your Rolex and your 7 French bulldogs and you'll be like, whoa, what just happened?
Yeah. And feeling so unsatisfied.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Totally. Yeah. Do you like how I think of 7 French bulldogs and a Rolex with wealth? It's just stuff that I would like probably not get.
Probably not get even if you weren't really rich.
Yeah, no way. I don't need a Rolex and I don't need 7 French bulldogs.
I'd like one.
So for all the foodies listening, what does a day on your plate look like?
So very different depending on where I am. But if I'm at home, do you want me to talk about supplements as well?
Oh, yeah, yes. Definitely.
Yep. So I wake up and I try and skull shitloads of water. Mm-hmm. And then I take a couple of spirulina tablets or a greens powder. My favorite one is from Tropica. And they've got a couple of different ones. They've got like a wellness greens as well as like a spirulina or a wheatgrass. And I like to take that on an empty stomach because I feel like it's really good at neutralizing the acidity in your body if it's on an empty stomach. And then usually what I'll do is have something to eat, which probably most of the time is either a smoothie or oats. In my oats, I eat a lot of oats. Like I don't have a small bowl. I have a really big bowl.
Yeah.
And I usually put like banana or berries or I usually cook up a lot of apple and rhubarb together.
Yeah.
And I just cook them with water. And then I add in some coconut yogurt or some cinnamon, really whatever I have in the fridge. And along with that, lately, I've actually been using a product called Gut Right by ATP Science. If for those who follow me, like, I've been having lots of weird gut problems for years, so I'm trying out this new product at the moment. So I have that with my food. And also in the morning, I try and have a multivitamin just for general health and well-being. And then after that, if I'm going to have a coffee, I'll have a coffee, which is a strong almond latte. And then I generally don't eat until like mid-afternoon. I like to train in the afternoon, but I like to train on an empty stomach. So I usually train at about like 1-ish and I'll have lunch at 2. Mm-hmm. And lunch is usually something like a massive salad with loads of roast vegetables, avocado, hummus or tahini, olive oil. Yeah. Once again, whatever I have in the fridge, but it's usually mostly just like heaps of veggies cooked in different ways with different sorts of healthy fats as like sides.
Yeah.
And then dinner kind of looks something similar to that, but usually I add more carbs to my dinner. So it'll be more potatoes or more rice. Some like really healthy, quick, easy go-to meals. I do like a big Mexican bowl with black beans, or I do like a laksa. Kind of like a combination between a green curry and a laksa with just like loads of veggies and rice noodles or rice. I eat a lot and I snack throughout the day too. I love eating like apples with peanut butter. I have heaps of fruit throughout the day as well, probably like 2 to 3 serves of fruit. I always have like my hummus and carrots or cucumber or whatever. And then around dinner time after I train, I either like take a magnesium supplement or I spray the Salt Lab stuff on. And then I also, one of my favorite supplements to take on a daily basis is curcumin. And that's, I think it's like a derivative from turmeric. And it's really great for anti-inflammatory stuff. So with like my weight training, it's your muscles, obviously your body gets like inflamed and hectic. So that's really great to support that, but also to promote like healthy gut flora. And a probiotic as well. I try and generally take one of those every day just to kind of keep everything okay. And there's other things that I use as well, depending on how I'm feeling, like vitamin C, like B12, like vitamin D. What else do I like to take? Kind of just depending, and protein as well. Yeah. But I do that all just like listening to my body, thinking, oh, I've had a big session at the gym, I'll have a protein shake now, as opposed to religiously doing it once a day.
Oh, Dara, thank you so much for joining us. You are seriously a little ray of sunshine from the moment you walked in. I was like, oh, I just feel like we've been friends forever. It's been amazing getting to know you. So thank you so much for your time and we hope you enjoy the rest of Melbourne.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for sharing with us what makes you so fabulous.
Oh, thank you. I've had the best conversation, seriously. I don't get to talk like this very often, so it's been so nice.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
We'd love to hear your feedback and the guests that you would like to hear from. So please feel free to send us a direct message via our Instagram page at The Healthy Hustlers. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you leave us a 5-star review and subscribe so you can keep up to date with our new episodes each week. For a dose of weekly happy, healthy news, you can subscribe to our newsletter via our website at thehealthyhustlers.com. Until next week, make sure that you're investing in yourself to keep the hustle healthy.